Thank you, Greg. I'm very happy to be backstage with our soloist, principal trumpet David Bilger. David, congratulations. What a brilliant and colorful performance.
Thank you so much.
You are introducing the work of Christian Lindberg to our audiences for the first time with this work. How would you describe his music in a nutshell?
It's sort of hard to describe it in a nutshell, but this piece is incredibly personal. And he talks about the fact that when he writes music, it's much better if he writes it for a person or for an event. And this was written for the Norwegian soloist Ole Edvard Antonsen. The slow theme is actually based on songs that Antonsen sang to his baby. Oh. So there are these childlike songs. And then at the time, Antonsen also was working with Turkish jazz musicians. And so there's this Turkish flavor that goes throughout the entire piece. And especially in the last movement, it really does turn into a little bit of a Turkish nightclub scene. So it takes you on a journey, that's for sure.
You have performed and recorded many of the great concerti, and with the orchestra you've played the Haydn Concerto, the Hummel, Bloch, Copland. But unlike these other composers, Lindberg is a virtuoso brass player, a trombonist. Are there many places in the score where you think, oh, this could have been written only by a brass player?
Definitely, because he understands the way that the technique of the instrument works. So the way he writes, there's some stuff where we do some crazy shakes on the instrument that you have to know what the fingerings of the instrument are. Otherwise, it doesn't work. And there's some other spots where it just fits really well and just sings because it's just the right notes on the instrument. So clearly, he not only is a world-class trombone player, but he knows how to write for the trumpet as well. It does make a difference.
Have you worked with him personally?
I haven't met him yet, and I was hoping he might come to these performances, but we did trade a bunch of actually Facebook messages and then turned that into emails as well, just to get some background on the piece, and I had a couple of questions to ask him about the score. The only way I really know him is through some really crazy YouTube videos that he's done, which shows some of the personality that I think really comes out in his music as well as his solo playing. He's an incredibly colorful musician in so many ways.
Besides your 23 years as principal trumpet of the Philadelphia Orchestra, you're also an avid chamber musician. You've played a wide range of repertoire, even with electroacoustic synthesizer, I believe. What qualities about the trumpet make it so versatile so that it can fit into so many different genres and styles of music?
Well, I think the trumpet itself has a strong place in commercial music, in R&B, in funk, in jazz. It's a voice that can shout out, especially with amplified music. So as the decades have passed and amps have taken over the stage in commercial music, the trumpet's held its own because of that. But I also feel like the trumpet can sound like a human voice. It can bring out the lyrical moments as well. So I think The instrument has a lot of diversity to it just naturally. It can be loud, it can be brash, it can be high, it can be bright, it can be intimate. It can do sort of all of those different things. That's why it fits into so many different genres.
It also seems like a physically demanding instrument to play. What's the key to longevity in playing the trumpet at the high level you do for so many years?
Well, practice. part of it is just having a work ethic. A friend of mine, Anthony Plogue, who's a fine trumpet player and teacher, he lives in Germany now, talks about first there comes this idea of motivation, but motivation wanes really quickly. So next comes determination, but that also tends to dissipate after time. And what's left is habit. Yeah. So in the morning, it's get up, take a shower, have a cup of coffee, play the trumpet. And what I end up playing is the same stuff I've been playing since I was 15 years old, which is all of the basic stuff on the instrument. And it's practicing diligently those basics that keep the technique of the instrument there. You know, I think more and more about as I get older is how lucky I was to have such great teaching that showed me how to be sort of more ergonomically set up well on the instrument. I'm not necessarily working as hard as some other folks. So it doesn't take quite as much, I guess, to get to the end of the piece, although this concerto certainly takes it out of me, I got to tell you.
You make it look so easy on stage, like you're barely expending a lot of energy. What are some of these ergonomic secrets, if you mind sharing those with us?
Well, there's just a few. One is just making sure you're planted on the ground. Jen Montone, who's first horn in the orchestra, we were doing a class together. Forget where it was, but it was through the orchestra. It was one of our outreach things on tour. And she talked about feeling like Mount Fuji. And I think that's a great visual where it's really wide at the base and then comes to a peak at the top, sort of equally. And if you feel yourself on the ground, that can really help you. And then breathing, making sure to be relaxed in the chest and breathe from low to high, fill up your gut and go. I think it's the same thing with singing. It really comes down to the breath, to taking great air in and releasing it in a way that avoids tension.
Is there a danger of over-practicing where you might hurt your embouchure?
Well, I mean, we definitely beat up our chops. Our lips are our chops. And so if you practice too much, or if you play, you know, like when we play a Mahler symphony or a Bruckner symphony, by the end of the night, we're pretty much at the end of it. Adolf Herseth, who was the first trumpet in the Chicago Symphony, I think for 52 years, he defined orchestral playing in the 20th century. He once said at the end of one of those pieces, if you feel like you can play another note, you haven't given it your all. And, you know, sometimes it feels like that. And with practice, part of it is seeing how long you can go without sort of hitting that wall, you know? A great quote from Alison Balsam, who's an English trumpet soloist, was, sometimes it's just game over. And what you want to try to do is avoid getting to that game over. Okay. So it's trying to make sure you don't use more pressure on your lips than you need to, and that you're relying on big muscles, you're relying on the air to make the sound.
You are passionate about teaching, and you teach at the Curtis Institute at Temple University, and also now at Northwestern. What is the single most important thing you wish to impart to your students?
Wow, that is maybe the toughest question I've ever been asked. Oh. One of the things that I bring into my teaching has absolutely nothing to do with music, and that is to try to mentor them to be responsible adults and to understand that music is incredibly important. It's a part of the fabric of our culture and many other cultures. But beyond that, what we need to do is to be there for each other in some way and to be supportive of our colleagues, our friends, and help people we don't even know. Those are the kinds of lessons that I try to get to, sometimes through music and sometimes through just talking about what's going on in their lives or what's going on in my life.
Oh, that is so inspiring. Thank you so much, David Bilger, for spending time with us, and congratulations again.
Thank you so much.